And it won't suffice. What I'm going to do is finish the barn. And I just wondered where we... I think we got to a stomach state in the Rosh Hashanah barn. I think that's what we're up to. So we were going through the different types of eladrim, she'ein lehem, oh, she'adam ochel prisayhem ba'olam hazeh, ve'keren teim l'slil ba'olam haba. This is the idea that a person can have the fruits of their principle in this world, but their principle is remaining for them. The principle of their reward for their mitzvot is waiting in olam haba. But we can get a few little fruits. We went through what it means, different tastes of that, or different benefits that we get in this world, even though they're really spiritual benefits that we get. And you really can't get a full spiritual benefit in this world because we're a guf, we're a body, and it's physical world. But there's like kind of a hint of spirituality, ruchnius, that Hashem is giving us to either keep us going, or to give us more benefit or opportunity, or to help us grow in terms of our personality, in terms of our essence, which then helps our neshama grow. Okay. So we went through up to the stomach space in Midrash Shacharis Ba'arvi. So Rav Schwab says on this that it means learning in a base in Midrash. It doesn't mean just going to shul. And the reason is that the idea is that someone sees you going, a man, going from the Beit Knesset to the shul to Beit Medrash. Okay, now sometimes it's in the same place. But the idea really is for the people in the world to see that incredible, I've just finished my tefillah, and now I'm going immediately to Beit Medrash. This incredible zrizus and love of Torah. This running to go and learn Torah. And early. Immediately. And then again in the evening, you know, mincha, maariv, whatever, going from one to the other. And the idea is learning, it's said that it's learning in public as opposed to only learning in private. Now, some people prefer to learn in private, but what he's saying here is that there's a big reward for learning in public, because this encourages other people to learn. It helps them want to learn. It creates like the Beit Medrash full and alive, and also people in the street see people constantly going into a Beit Medrash. And this creates, oh, what's in there, or what's, you know, what is this? Or, wow, they went to this place. What are they doing there? And the idea of Shacharis Ba'arvi is that it's two times a day. That there's a chance in the morning for people to see, and then there's another chance for other people to see in the evening. This activity on the street moving into the Beit Medrash. So it's interesting. I read a story once about a father who would come home late at night, very tired. You know, after work, and he would want to go to learn, but he was very tired at night, and he would sleep through most of the shiur. The same shiur was given again in the morning by the same rav, and in the morning he was wide awake, ready. It was before davening, and he went to the rav and he asked him. He said, or one of his rabbanim, and he said, "What should I do? Should I go to shiur at night or in the morning?" And he said, "The difference is that at night," he told him the difference. But one of the other differences is that my children, my boys who are young, they see me in the evening when I come home, and they see that I run off to go to the shiur. In the morning, they're not awake yet when I go to the shiur in the morning, because it's before davening, everything else. So Grof sat and thought about it, and he said, "You have to go both times. Go at night, so your children see you go, and sleep if you have to." Sleep if you have to. And that was mine, it's okay. And he says, and at night and in the morning, go for your own learning. Okay, so anyway, the schar, the reward in this world of influencing others just by your walking in and out of the Beit Medrash in the morning and night is that you, Hashem helps you become a Ben Torah. He gives some kind of a push for you to be on a higher madriga in terms of learning and being a Ben Torah who is a practicing Torah Jew, who is a Torah Jew who practices it, who wants to influence others, who brings it out in the world. Hashem Rav Schwab said that the schar is that it pushes you to move up madriga in becoming a Ben Torah. So the next one is Achnasas Orchim, that's hospitality to guests. So, Orachim, the word Orachim comes from the word Orach, road. And it used to be that people were traveling. They came to your village, your town, your shtetl, your tent, whatever, through all our centuries of life. And you invited someone in. So it was Avram who invited people constantly into his tent. We know he had doors on every side. But the people usually were, back then, were travelers. And it says in the Sefer Shabbos, and we learn this from Abraham, that Gedola Knesset Orfim Mekabas Pnei Hashchina. It's more important to have guests, to invite in guests, than to receive the Shechina, the presence of a Kodesh Baruch Hu. And this is exactly what Avraham Avinu did, as we know. He was sitting there on the third day after his bris milah, and he was in a lot of pain. He was talking, Kodesh Baruch Hu comes to visit him. He's giving a Bikur Cholim visit. And he jumped up and left the Shechina. Avraham jumped up and left in order to be, to Mekabel, his guest, to receive these three Arabs. Okay? It wasn't just, you know, fellow Jews, there were three strangers. But the idea was that he was coming to do Achnasas Orchim, despite his pain, and even more, despite that he was having this personal conversation with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. So it says that basically receiving a guest is greater than receiving of the Shechina, Hashem's presence. And the scar is that one gets a little bit closer to the Shechina because they left the Shechina to take care of Hashem's guest. Now obviously Hashem sent those guests. He could have sent them 10 minutes later, 15 minutes later, 2 hours later. He sent them at that moment. And by Avraham leaving the Kodesh Baruch Hu to take care of these weary travelers and wash their feet and feed them food, etc., etc., he had the scar of actually becoming close to Kodesh Baruch Hu. A lot of times we're like doing something we think is a mitzvah, and we're like really intense with the Kodesh Baruch Hu, and we're neglecting, let's say, something else. And that might not be the right cheshbon. Sometimes we get involved in our own spirituality.
Can I say something? That happened last night. I went to the Yom Yonah meeting, which is very inspiring. You know, once a year, there's a woman who came to sell her husband's sparim. It was on this Mikdash. She told me she didn't go in to listen because she thought she'd get too distracted with the shiur, and her topic was to come and sell the sparim. I thought that was very regardless. She came away from here and said something and kept her focus on what she wanted to meet her and go.
I think it's a very big check, and the whole thing we're talking about of tefillah being lihit palel, to clarify, and it's really constantly working on what, you know, what I'm really, is this for what I'm really doing, which is what Hashem wants me right now, you know, that whole process. When it's consulting with the Rav after the fact, or with a friend or with someone, you know, or with yourself, you know, just what is my real job right now, at this moment.
It just happened to me a couple of weeks ago. I was walking toward my husband to the El Gavir on top, and it was hot. It was an all-day film, the heat of the day. It was very hot. So I was like, you know what? And you saw it, I'm not falafel. And we live in Ramanish Hall, and the closest place was Shulchan Aruch. I said, are you sure you want this tonight? You know, yeah. I said, oh my God, I said, you just took a 2 hour walking to me, I gotta walk again. I said, I don't know if I'm up to this. What's the big deal? What's the big deal? I said, I'm not gonna take a kid, I'm gonna walk. I said, okay, I'll walk. I said, oh, Hashem, please just tell me get into this, I can make it back and forth, whatever. And as I'm walking, I bumped into somebody who I haven't seen in about 2 or 3 years. She happened to be visiting Eretz Yisrael, and she was leaving the next morning. I said, now I know why I came here. Just to bump into her, and then she's telling me that she was so impressed that I told her I had to come to you. And she said she's visiting her sister because her daughter's having a baby soon. And her daughter had to take some kind of course until it's in, and she was watching her grandson for 2 weeks. But it was a very intense course, and she couldn't be in the baby, so she was just taking those 2 weeks. So the next morning she was leaving. I said, gee, that's why I bumped into her, just so I can see her. And when I came home, I said, well, you know, I got you for the block or whatever it was. I said, and I really didn't want to go. I said, it's just too hot. I just didn't feel good. But once I got there, I was fine with it. So I said to me, see, I guess I should have, what am I supposed to do? Am I supposed to go? Go, now go. And I went, and I bumped into the car. It was very interesting.
Maybe next week she'll make something out of it.
She owns an apartment here. So it's not like she doesn't come, but she didn't know why was leaving her.
I remember a story of a friend of mine. She was at her wedding, and I think she went off to the side to Devon Maris, and Rev Gettinger from, I don't know if you heard of him, his big Rav in New York, and he was the Rav, he was in Sadeh Kedusha, and he was the Rav of her chassan. And he went and, I don't know if he told her chassan or he told her, it's not, you shouldn't be davening Maariv. You should be with your guests, you should be with this. He said, you should not be davening Maariv now, this is not the time.
Mm-hmm.
This is your chassan and you should be dancing and blah, blah, blah. You shouldn't have gone off to the side. It wasn't.
Being with those humans?
Said no. Okay, so anyway, it's not an easy, clear picture always. But the idea is that the idea in this case is that actually, by running to do the will of Hashem, which in this case was Masas Orchim, you become closer to the Shechina. But guess every time you get closer to the Shechina, you know more and more what your role really is. And that's why we have Gedolim, because they are closer and closer. That's why we go to them to ask, what should I really have been doing in this situation? What really is my task here? Or from the smallest little situation to, you know, I had to ask Shilas, you know, whatever, we deal with, you know, little things, you know, based on the situation that I'm in now, there are a lot of things that I am putter from and that I should be doing something else. And it became very hard for me to accept that. Or the story of the Rav who went to visit the, I don't remember which Rav it was, he went to visit the man in the hospital. And the doctor had said to the, in a hospital, you have to conserve every possible ounce of energy. You can't do anything that has any kind of exertion in it whatsoever. Right now, he had just been through a tuach or whatever. And when the rabbi comes in, he said to the rabbi, you know, I managed to put on tefillin this morning. He said, you committed an avera. He said, what do you mean I managed to put on tefillin? I didn't tell the doctor, I didn't tell anybody, I took it out. You know, I got the nurse to help me or whatever, I put it on. I mean, we've heard this story.
Mm-hmm.
And the rabbi said, You had one mitzvah to be mekayim, which is the shmoras nafshcha. You have to guard your body right now, and you blew it. So you were supposed to do nothing. You were not supposed to put on tefillin this morning. And this is from I have to find out who the rabbi is, who the gadol is, but that's what you were supposed to do. So anyway, okay. So it's interesting. We'll go on now. So it says you can be elevated closer to Kadosh Baruch Hu by running to do His will. And that's the scar of it. And it's interesting, it also says that the poor person who comes for the Orach, the guest, does more for the host than the host does for the poor person. That host is getting something in a spiritual way. The poor person is being given physical. So actually the host gets more. And you know, we think, I'm giving to someone, actually you're receiving. So then it goes on to the next one is Bikur Choli. These are just Chai Angelou. These are all the things that you get a little scar in this world, even though your main interest is kept in the next world. And you say in your Kasat Torah in the morning, or just finishing it. So Rashab said, if you're visiting an ill person, and you start to really feel compassion for the disability, the suffering, whatever it is, the person's particular matzav, his particular situation, then you'll also come to an akar satov, a gratitude to Hashem for your own health. And so this is the payroof, the payoff, the interest, is that you come to an incredible akar satov for your own ability to walk out of that hospital, for example, or to be able to cook for someone that's not well, that you can actually stand up and cook, or that you can offer words of, you know, strength to them. But the idea is that you become a person who has gratitude for your own life and for your own health. And that's a higher spiritual level. Many people walk around the world without any gratitude for anything in their life, or they miss it, or they forget. And that's one of the parents. The second thing that in Bikur Cholim, visiting the sick, is that it's you learn sensitivity to what an ill person really needs. Not necessarily what you want to give them. A lot of people just assume, I'm going to give this, I'm going to bring that, I'm going to tell them this, I'm going to offer them that, and it's not necessarily what the person needs. And by becoming a very sensitive giver, takes an enormous amount of gvura, not just chesed, not just giving away, but gvura meaning self-discipline, to really understand the person and what they need, or what the family needs, or what the household needs. It takes an enormous amount of sensitivity, and sometimes holding back not what you want to bring them, not what you think is going to be good for them, whether it's a spiritual or a physical level. So it says that to let go, maybe not give, maybe not get involved, maybe actually a bigger chesed than getting involved. Maybe not even being informed. Now, I can just give a personal example. You know, there were a period of time that probably that 25 questions a day, how are you? 25 questions a day, how are you, can be extremely draining, especially if you're not doing well and people want to hear that you're doing well. You know, sometimes just not even asking, just saying, what can I do for you? Is anything I can do, or should I not call it off? It's sometimes an incredible sensitivity. But all of this takes a lot of, you know, even to ask a family member, you know, that mother or that wife or that husband of the ill person, you know, could be just so tired of answering the question, you know. And yes, people want to know out of their heart. They really want to know. But it takes an enormous amount to constantly answer that question. And you have to phrase the question always in the right way, you know, depending on what you want to reveal or not reveal, or people want to hear that you're doing better and you maybe not. And anyway, so that's just a personal example, but the idea of bigger holding is working with that person. And to remember they're a human being, they're a person, and they really can voice needs and desires and things like that. And sometimes it could mean just listening, no advice, no spiritual, no physical advice. This extra sensitivity that a person can acquire by being around an ill or an elderly person, or a person who has certain disabilities or certain limitations, can change you inside and make you on a higher level sensitivity. And you become more and more like Lahavdil HaKadosh Baruch Hu, like his sensitivity. And what you're gaining then is that you're emulating how Hashem treats every individual with this intense sensitivity, and Hashem knows exactly what to give, how to give, when to give. And we can look and think, well, that's a little bit harsh, but Hashem knows what he's doing. The idea is that by our becoming more sensitive and understanding and loving and caring based on what the person needs, not on what we want to give them, then the schar is our internal growth of becoming more like a Kadosh Baruch Hu, becoming more on a higher level human being. We grow like the Gedolim that are so incredibly sensitive. We grow in our sensitivity and our humanness. And this enables a person to then go to the next step and grow farther and farther and farther and become a person of greatness. So that's the schar in this world, that Hashem, by your putting in that effort, Hashem helps you become a higher level human being, higher level humanness and sensitivity. And then you get more opportunities and other ways of being sensitive. You want to say something?
No.
Okay. There's water, please, anybody needs, okay? The next one is Hakhnasas Kala, providing for a bride. So I'm going to go through these a little quicker. Well, I'm not going to get to the next. Providing for a bride. So the halacha, bottom line, Hakhnasas Kala, is financial assistance to a kala for a wedding, for clothing, furniture, any kind of household necessities. All belong in that area. Other things are, Hakhnasas Kala can be suggesting a shidduch. It can be working on the shidduch, getting information, or creating a meeting, whatever. Sheva brachos, going to dancing at the chasana, mitzamech, the chasana kala, etc., etc. Anything surrounding the wedding and getting married and setting up the household. The Gemara says that this mitzvah is considered as if he had rebuilt one of the ruins of Yerushalayim. And in Devarim, it said that Yerushalayim was destroyed, one of the reasons, but Yerushalayim, because we didn't perform a mitzvah with simchas betuv lev, happiness and a joyful heart. And the idea of Hakhnasas Kala is bringing out that simcha, creating as much possible simcha for a kala and a chasen as possible, before the marriage, the wedding itself, and into that first year of marriage. And Rav Schwab said that the dividend, the schar, in this world, okay, forget what you get in the next world, is that we're rebuilding Yerushalayim. That you have a piece in the actual rebuilding of the ruins of Yerushalayim and rectifying its spiritual downfall. Okay. And another aspect of this is that it's often easier for a person to feel for another person's pain than it is to feel for their simcha. Sometimes we have our own issues about feeling for another person's happiness, whether it's because we're in a sad place at that time, or whether we're jealous of the situation that person is in. It's, you know, all different reasons. But it often says that it's harder to feel simcha for another person than it is to feel sorrow or pain for them. So the idea is to let go of your own unhappiness or pain to feel another person's simcha, and not to be jealous of another person's fortune. Okay? And to rise to this level, it really, as Pirkei Avos says, it really creates an ayin tov and a lev tov, a good heart and a good eye. It's like really wanting good for other people, really, really wanting the best for them, spiritually and physically. There's a beautiful story about Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. He was in yeshiva, and every day he got a ride home from a certain one of the kolel. And he said, you know, I can't give you a ride home today because we're going, my wife and I are interested in an apartment. We want to look at the apartment one more time before we settle on it. So we won't be able to. So Rosh HaMoshiach says, okay, I'll go with you. Somebody thinks, oh, he's going to go with us. I take his time to look at an apartment. He said, no, I'm going to arrange for you another ride to go home. And he was by Bagan, I think, and he would come back to Shai Chesed. He said, no, I want to go with you. So he takes the Rav, and they go to the apartment, and they're looking around the apartment. And the Rav goes to every single room in the apartment, bathroom, bedroom, checks every corner, looks at the windows, everything. Like looking at it more than they looked at it. Then they leave, and he asks the Rav, why did you want to come? He says, I have an ayin tov, and I wanted to give a bracha on the apartment that should have, from me, an ayin tov. I have a good eye, and I want that there should be bracha in your apartment. So, the idea of really wanting good for someone else, it says it takes a lot of internal work to get to this part. And the scar again is a spiritual fruit. The spiritual fruit is your inner development of trying to emulate the love of Hashem for other people. Hashem loves every one of us. He is out there trying to get the best for each of us. Sometimes it comes through a little bit of pain and suffering, but let me show you. He wants the best for each of us. And the idea is for us to try to emulate him and want the best for everybody around us. For everybody around us. It's not always easy. Anyway, and that brings us to be closer to Hashem and to be more innerly developed as a loving human being. Okay, so I'm going to go on because we'll be eating up all our time. But Leviyat Hameh, escorting the dead. So the halacha for Leviyat Hameh is the Chevra Kedisha's, all the Chevra Kedisha responsibilities that they do as part of Leviyat Hameh, escorting the dead. The other is participating in the Levi itself and in the Kfura, in the burial itself. And there's also an aspect of visiting a Kever afterwards. But the Perus is that this mitzvah wakes a person up, Kreitur Rashwa, and it makes a person, alerts him to his own mortality and his day of death, and can help him to do tshuva, to return and to kind of look into what his life is all about. That I have life, what am I going to use it for? I'll go on, because I have a lot of time. And the second to last is Havas Shalom ben Adam l'chaver, bringing peace between man and man. This is acting as a peacemaker, man and man, man and wife, helping people work on a marriage, whatever it is. Negotiation between people, negotiations between people, anything from a simple, you know, co-worker situation to a big, you know, be a very big machlokas between communities, whatever it is, it's bringing peace. And the peirus in this world is that the peacemaker actually becomes beloved by other people and receives the Keser Shem Tov, the crown of a good name. You can read about it in Pirkei Avos. But that's one of the peirus in this world, that a person who works on peace gets a good name in this world. People look up to them and think of them as being honest, and et cetera, et cetera. Okay, and the last is Talmud Torah Keneged Kula. The study of Torah is equivalent to all of these things that we have mentioned over the last two classes. it's learning and teaching. Teaching Torah is equal to all of the mitzvot alone, and it's a great form of chesed. If you can't actually teach Torah, you can promote Torah institutions financially or emotionally in any way, psychologically, or helping people. A wife can encourage her husband or children to learn. And the Sfar, they said, the Sfar, our Schwab says that the perus, the reward in this world, is that you get a feeling, I have given Torah over to someone else. I have given a little piece of Hashem's word to another human being. It can be teaching Aleph Beis, it can be anything at all. But it's like I'm trying to connect a person to a Kodesh Baruch Hu through Torah. And that's the, so this ends Birkas HaTorah. And we had all three Torah recitations. We had Mikra in the beginning, which is Birkas HaKohanim, which comes from the written Torah. We had Mishnah and Gemara, which were the Eilat Devarim of the two. And all three are referenced to Talmud Torah, have references in them. Okay? Now, it's 10:12, and I haven't begun the real shiur yet. So, it's up to you. I could start it, I could do whatever.
Yeah.
Okay. Anybody wants to leave at any point in between, please just go ahead, okay? The idea of going, like we said, from the transition that we say from Birkas HaTorah to Birkas HaShachar, that morning blessing. The truth is, like we said in the beginning, originally we went from Birkas HaShachar were said first, and then Birkas HaTorah, okay, were said after that. And that we don't follow the minhag, the general. There are a lot of kilos that do still follow that custom, but we in general don't. So the blessings of the Torah were actually said after those blessings of the morning. You know, v'sech v'zina l'afim ben yom v'ein layla, shelo atzani goy, shelo atzani aved. All those were said first. And if you remember, it follows the architecture of the Beis HaMikdash. So we went from the Ezra's Nashim, which is the big, huge frontal courtyard where everybody was either saying Tehillim or learning Torah, not learning Tehillim, but saying Tehillim, doing certain things in there, and then went up the steps to the Ezra's Yisrael. Now, leaving the Ezra's Nashim was anybody could be there, non-Jews, Jews, going up these 15 steps until we got to the Ezra's Yisrael, where only Klal Yisrael could be there. No non-Jews were allowed to be there. The beginning, if you remember in the picture, the beginning of the Ezra's Yisrael was where the Birkas HaTorah was set. Okay, and that was the Duchan who had three steps. And that's where the Kohanim stood and blessed Klal Yisrael right after they got up after these 15 steps. So we're learning a little bit on the way around because that's the minhag of today. Because people want to say Birkas HaTorah and learn Torah and then they'll go on to their shul, etc. Now, the fascinating thing is that I just want to point out a few things. These 15 steps up, okay, that go up, reflect the 15 brachos of Birkas HaShachar. Those are probably only 13, but the truth is, the other two that are connected, I don't have my sitter. You can hand me a sitter. I have a sitter up there.
Doesn't matter. Even the one in front of your hand is.
You look, you know, it starts with Lasech Vivino, Lasech Vivino, Lasech Vivino, Laila. And then, Hanasei Leif Kawach is 13. The 14th is Hamavir Sheina Meinai, Esnuma Makapai. Remove the Sheina, sleep for my eyes, etc., etc. And the last thing it says, Brechat Hashem HaGomel Hasadim Tovim La'amos Yisrael. That a Kodesh Baruch Hu is the gomel, the bestower of chasadim tovim, loving kindness to Amo Yisrael. That's the 15th bracha. There are 15 steps, one for each bracha, until you go up to the top step. And you pass through the, what's called the Nakanor gate, and then you get to the Ezus Yisrael. Now, as they stepped up, we say it now, and the idea was that it corresponds the tefillah that we do now corresponds exactly to this architecture, which we went through in, I think, the first class. But each step those 15 steps were correspond to each one of those brachas. No, we would say.
Oh, we would say.
Mm-hmm. Or you say to yourself or whatever. Now, the interesting thing is that in the Birkat Kohani, Yerachacha Hashem v'yishmeracha, there's also 15 words. Okay? There's this 15 meeting together. We're going right from Birkat HaShachar to Birkat HaTorah. Now, another thing is if you look at the Eilu Devarim She'ein Lahem Shiur, okay, there's five. Okay? Five things that don't have a limit. Five mitzvahs that we're told don't have a limit. Then Eilu Devarim She'ein Lahem Pritechem B'Olam Hazeh, five things that we get rewarded, 10 things that we get rewarded for in Olam Hazeh, together are 15. Okay? So the Mikra, Mishnah, and Gemara portions are all 15. Okay? There's this concept of 15 going on. Right at this meeting point between the Ezra's Neshim and the Ezra's Yisrael. Now, I just want to bring up a few more things about it. There's 15. Okay? Because I want to go into this idea of 15. The Shir HaMa'alos, as we know, are 15. There are 15 Shir HaMa'alos. Now, originally, those Shir HaMa'alos were said or sang and played music of instruments we don't know on these 15 steps, okay, leading up to the, on those 15 steps leading up from the Ezra's Nashrim to the Ezra's Throne. And the general populace used to stand outside and the Levim would sing and play in music that they said was May Olam Haba. And that was the 15 Shir HaMa'alos along there. And the word HaMa'alos is really from the word steps, 15 steps. And we actually say the Shir HaMa'alos, there's a development within us that's building up, upward. Okay, now, I just want to break away a little bit from the Beis HaMikdash right now. When we say Dayenu, okay, in the Pesach Haggadah, which is said on the 15th day of the month, right? Pesach is the 15th day of Nisan. The 15th Dayenu is that we have the Beis HaMikdash, the Beis HaMikdash. Okay, that we have the Beis HaMikdash. So there's some type of climax of reaching 15. Some type of building up of 15 that we have Klal Yisrael. Okay, we're going to get there. Okay, now, since it's Erev Tisha B'Av, we're mourning the Beis HaMikdash, and I'm going to explore this a little bit about what it means a little bit. So, first we have, like she said, the moon cycle. The moon cycle starts with zero moon, goes 15 days till we have full moon, and then 15 days till we decline, and then we have star all over again at the end. Okay? The full moon is the center of the cycle. It's the climax of 15. Similar to a woman's cycle. Now, it used to be that we ran right with the moon, but, you know, a thousand years ago or whatever, we've lost that. But the idea is going, building up to the point of climax of 15, and then building back down and letting go. Jewish history reflects the exact same building up. Avraham Avinu, until Shlomo HaMelech, okay, was 15 generations. Shlomo HaMelech, until the Korban of Bayit Rishon, was 15 generations. Now, the 15 generations do not correspond in years. The 15 generations from Avraham to, I just want to quote this as 5 points, to Shlomo were many more years, and people lived a lot longer. Those were many more years of life, but the generations were exactly 15. And the 15 generations until Korban was a shorter, 400 whatever amount of years. Okay? But Shlomo HaMelech generation was exactly at the 15th generation. So this is a cycle of building up to a climax at a certain point, full moon, the top of the step, however you put it. And then the 15th decline back down. There's an interesting Midrash Rabbah on Parshas Bo. And Parshas Bo, as you know, is when we receive our first mitzvah as a klal. It says that Hashem said to Moshe and to Aharon, Chodesh Hazeh Lachem, Rosh Chodeshim. This month is for you, the head of the month. And basically, Klal Yisrael, Pshat is that Klal Yisrael is becoming a separate nation. And this has launched off our separateness, our newness as a nation, being launched off by the commandments that we count time differently than all the other nations of the world. And Goyim, who basically count by the sun, I mean, later on, the Islam, whatever. But the basic was, now you're going to be a different nation, completely. And you will count by the moon. Then they went on to give us the mitzvah of the Pesach, Parma Pesach, etc., etc. But the first thing we got was to count Rosh Chodesh. What's this all about? What's this got to do with anything? Because we live differently in time than anybody else. And the reflection of this is a Chodesh. Now, Chazal had many pshat, different explanations of what this means, Chodesh HaShalachem. And one of them says that you're given to count by the moon because of your, Bnei Yisrael, similarity to the moon. That's why you're being given time by the moon. How? Just like the moon rose over 15 days and then starts to wane 15 more days, similar, Bnei Yisrael is like that. We build and then we decline. We have 15, and it says we have 15 generations from Avraham Shlomo and 15 more from Shlomo to Chorban Beis by creation. Now just as another little point, Zohar says, Tihara Bashlamasa, meaning that it said that the year of Shlomo's generation, that year was called Tihara Bashlamasa. It means the complete moon. That Shlomo, as Zohar says, thank you. But it's not really Hebrew, it's Aramaic. Mm-hmm. Siahara. You can copy it from me later if you want. Siahara Bashmata. The complete moon. That Shlomo HaMelech's generation was the complete moon. They were the complete reflection of a Kaddish Baruch Hu, just like the moon reflects the sun. The sun, they say, is a Kaddish Baruch Hu, the moon is crying throughout. At that generation, they were of Shlomo HaMelech, there was a complete reflection of a Kaddish Baruch Hu in the world by Shlomo HaMelech and his generation.
Where are we halting now? The 15th generation? Up or down? Where are we halting now? The 15th, in the 15th, up or down?
We're going up. So how do we build up? Mm-hmm. Okay? So there are a lot of ways, but given the approach of Tisha B'Av, I wanted to look exactly what it says, and the advice that's given through us through Tisha B'Av, Tefillah, Zatara, etc. So, the amazing thing is that we read in the morning. We read in the morning of Tisha B'Av from the Torah, and it says exactly what we're not doing and why. So I just want to read to you just a little piece of it, if that's okay. It says, "Ki kolit banim uvenei banim unoshantem ba'aretz." So it says when you have children, you get children and grandchildren, and will have been long in the land. It says you will grow corrupt and make a graven image of anything, and you will do evil in the eyes of the Kaddish Baruch Hu to anger him. Okay. Then it goes on and it says, but we will do worship other gods, etc., etc. Hashem will scatter you among the peoples, because he left you in number among the nations, or Hashem will lead you. And then you will worship gods, a handiwork of man, wood, stone, which do not see, hear, eat, you do not smell. From there, you will seek the Kaddish Baruch Hu, your God, and you will find him, if you search for him with all your heart and with all your soul. Ki tidrashena b'chol levavcha v'chol nafshecha. So, Hashem is basically saying what happened. And Moshe warns, it says that Moshe told, this is from Devarim, that Moshe is giving tachacha, and we're in Devarim now. He says that you will be having long in the land. The Chazal say on this that one must always pursue newness, freshness, and continually strive for spiritual growth. The idea that we're not supposed to be is people who just kind of do rote, thing after thing after thing. The idea that we reflect the moon, which grows and does wane, but then grows again and then does wane and grows again, and that we reflect this idea of freshness and renewal, that we have this opportunity to grow and change. But people tend to grow complacent, they take things for granted, they stop searching, they just do what they do. Then what happens, boredom comes in, and then they start looking other places for newness. Instead of back where they were before, they figured, oh, that was just old. So in old times, we did idolatry. Today, we do idolatry in different forms. You know, all our isms, materialism, whatever. All the isms. Yet Hashem is promising that if we come back and look for Him, and search for Him, look for the truth, then we'll find Him. He's saying, our first commandment was the Chodesh Hazeh Lechem. Your whole concept as a people is renewal. That it's in human nature to get blah, whatever, but you are separate from other people, from other nations. You have in you this concept of renewal. And then, the next part of it, of this says, when you, in the Kriyas HaTorah, when you are in distress, and all these things have befallen you, all the terrible things, at the end of the day, you shall return unto HaKadosh Baruch Hu and hearken to His voice. He shall not, Shem is a merciful God, He shall not abandon you nor destroy you, and He shall not forget the grief of your forefathers. And then He says that He will come and save us. And He's shown us that He saved us over and over again. And He did in Egypt before your eyes, He'll do it again. And basically saying that although there's a galus, a separation between me and you on a personal level, or between me and the Jewish people on a general level, this galus, he's saying that you can always return because Hashem is waiting for us to return. And Eicha, when we read Megillas Eicha on Tisha B'Av, it's all about this widow who's not really a widow because her husband is still alive. But the idea, she's like a semi-widow because she feels that a Kodesh Baruch Hu has died, has left her, so she goes off to all the isms, right, and does all the other things because she thinks she's left alone, bereft. And bereft because of what she did to separate herself from Kodesh Baruch Hu, meaning us. But the truth is, and the pain and the suffering that come from this separation, of looking into all these other things, all these other men and all these other situations and everything else, thinking that she's going to find something greater. And in the end, she realizes this, and comes back to a Kodesh Baruch Hu. And then Hashem opens up and brings her back. And it's very interesting that there's a similarity to Shir HaShirim. Shir HaShirim, which we say Pesach, but we also say every Shabbat, is also, but in a different way, in a loving way, it shows this cycle of the husband and the wife, the coming together, the pulling apart. The Kodesh Baruch Hu and the Jewish people coming together and pulling apart. It's very similar to what Eicha is talking about, in that it's this constant Hashem coming close and going. Like you said, go to the kotel, you can have a great tefillah, go to the kotel and have a terrible tefillah, right? But there's this constant moving together and moving apart, moving together, moving apart. Hashem's always there, right? But we perceive Him as being very far or non-existent to being very close to us. And yet the pain and suffering from the separation can either take us to go farther away from Him, or it can take us to work to become closer to Him, one or the other. It's interesting that the Thanks Sibi, she gave me a take from Rav Shimon Pinchas on Shabbat. But his whole tape relates Shabbat and the Beit HaMikdash together. Most of the tape is like this. So I want to tell you an interesting parallel that between Tisha B'Av and Shabbat. So Tisha B'Av, Eicha, is the sadness and mourning, the painful side. Shabbat, the Shir HaShirim, is the simple side, the more happy, hopeful side. There's
he is
with us, but he's limited. His presence is very limited. But they say Shabbat brings. Now it depends on you.
So we know we want or Hashem feel that we need to
Both. And everything I shun does is for us, really, ultimately. It doesn't need to do it for us. It doesn't need to be here. It doesn't need to be in the world. It doesn't need us.
But he didn't even need a way for us to feel
presence. But that's right, because he wants to give to us. So he can make his presence more known or less known. But the idea that we don't have the space of mitzvah means that there's a huge, the majority of his presence we can't know. Because it's not here. But they say that Shabbos is a little bit different, because if you bring in Shabbos and really hold Shabbos, then you will feel more of the Shekhinah on Shabbos than not. It's like a person who never kept Shabbos, but can't understand, once you can't understand it at all. You keep Shabbos a little bit, suddenly it has a little bit of, oh, this is what it's all about. Or this is a little bit what it's all about. Anyway, it says therefore, you can't mourn the Beis HaMikdash because on Shabbat, because really it's here. There's an aspect that's here. We just have to work harder to feel it. I'm almost finished. Whatever. So anyway, the idea of Tisha B'Av is looking at the Beis HaMikdash at the house of Hashem, a house of holiness. And it's also that the mourning is that I don't know what it really feels like to have this full presence of the Kaddish Baruch Hu. I can get little ideas. You know, I have moments in my life, spiritually high moments, where I feel the clarity of the Kaddish Baruch Hu, and it can be gone 2 seconds later. But imagine having that clarity a lot of the time, or most of the time, or that clarity quantitatively or qualitatively greater. That's what I'm missing. So, you know, when you ask the question, I don't always know what to do. You know, I don't always. You know, should I keep davening for this? Should I not daven for this? Should I be davening my spiel, or should I be running to do a nesus orphan? Should I sit home with my child, or should I go out and do, you know, take care of this sick person? All these questions are less questions when you have the Beis HaMikdash. The clarity that we don't have comes from this lack of the Beis HaMikdash, of Hashem's presence. And without Hashem's home, Hashem's not in close proximity. He's just not here. He's not in his house. And it's a base that makes it a bite. It's his house.
I would think that his house outside. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He's definitely here. I mean,
he's here, but he's not in his. The house is broken up. Right, he's in the world.
The whole concept of
he is always right around us, but he is not. He's full, like it says, the full moon of the time of Shlomo HaMelech. We have no clue what that means. Nations from all over the world recognized that Hashem and the Beis HaMikdash was the ultimate truth and came to Shlomo HaMelech to get advice, to offer karbanos, to give gifts. I mean, imagine, when they had to destroy us, then they came to give gifts. I mean, they felt it. They knew it. It doesn't mean that Hashem isn't here. You can call Hashem at any moment, and you can create a close relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. But what is Tisha B'Av? Tisha B'Av is, I can't get it off. I can't have that full relationship. I still live in pain, illness, suffering, confusion. Any of these things are here because the Beis HaMikdash isn't here. In the height of the Beis HaMikdash, there wasn't. We brought Karbana. It wasn't. But the biggest lack, I think, is this lack of clarity. Because truthfully, that's how we have to live. And it says, Ein Simcha Ketaras HaSpekos. There is no happiness like the removal or resolving of doubt. Mm-hmm. All the doubts that we live with, all the pain of us, should I do it this way, should I do it that way? I do it with my kids, I do it with my husband, have I deal with this Talmud Torah, do I send them to this place, this yeshiva, do I, you know, live in Eretz Yisrael, do I live in Clippers, do I this, do I that? Do I pick up the phone and call this person? Or do I, you know, sit with my child? Or do I clean the bathroom? Or do I, you know, whatever it is. Like, we're like, you know, constantly making all day long choices, this, that. But the idea also of not feeling Hashem around us. Hashem is there. He's, like you say, sitting on your shoulder. Do I feel Hashem sitting on my shoulder? Not usually. I have to talk to him. I have to create a relationship with him. I have to work at it to get that relationship going. Not an automatic gift. And when we can't see clearly, we start making a lot of mistakes.
That's why we need the one who shows the money out there. But back then I would say there's not.
that they also have. You're each person was on a higher level themselves. In the view. Because of the faith of Mesa. But each one of us, you're right, we go to the building where all who have that relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu and clarity on a much higher level. So that's where we go to them. In the meantime, we're making all our little, lack of clarity decisions. And then sometimes we go into it can also hit when we can't see clarity and we can't see. So sometimes we get disillusioned, bored, or just go into this rote. I'll just do the same thing over and over again. Instead of
changing.
And the idea is that it's understanding that the idea of Tisha B'Av is mourning our lack of clarity, mourning our lack of reasons and love of doing the mitzvot and running after the things. When you're not clear, you can't run after things. You can't run to do because you're I'm not sure. I remember Rob telling me that Jews could be incredibly physically strong people, running, doing in the world, conquering the world, but they can't because they're so caught up with making the right moral Torah decision. And that takes an enormous amount of internal energy. If you don't have that constant going back and forth to decide what's right, you just run ahead. You step on somebody's foot, they step on somebody's foot. So you just go for it. The Jews are really incredibly strong people. But the strength is becomes so internalized in their inner avoda, in their inner work of doing the right thing, that they don't have always, they're not physically strong because of that. Oh, interesting. Anyway, all the suffering and confusion, whether it's small or large, stems from this lack of the Beis HaMikdash of Kodesh Baruch Hu's shechina, a feeling he's far away. But from this place of mourning, only from this sadness of what we lack, then we can start to go back. And that's why after Tisha B'Av, which is necessary, this kind of feeling of loss, is necessary so that we can, then right around the corner is Elul, Tishrei, Lachagim, Yom Kippur, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, coming back to Kodesh Baruch Hu. And Hashem is waiting, like it says in Elul, Hashem is waiting for us to come back to Him. Mm-hmm. But first you have to recognize what you don't have to go back to Him. That's what Eicha, Shir Shirim, is like, when it says in Shir Shirim that Hashem knocked on the door, right? This is in Parak Gimel, I think, or Dal. Hashem knocks on the door. And I was too embarrassed to go answer the door because I was too involved in all these who knows what stuff. Finally, when I got to the door, Hashem was gone. Then it's now I know what I lost. Now my pain is there. And Eicha is all about that. Eicha is all about this pain, this loss, and suffering that we go through without a Kodesh Baruch Hu. And the reason that we're compared to the moon is because we can renew every time, whether it's every year, every month, every day, every second. We have in us this concept of renewal, of looking for Kodesh Baruch Hu again, putting Him into our life. And as we said, this whole we're doing is tefillah. The whole idea of tefillah comes from the root klila, klel, which means to clarify, to understand, to try to make things clear, life clear. So that's all. That's what we're doing when we're at davening, when we're talking to Kodesh Baruch Hu. Like you said, Kodesh Baruch Hu is right here on my shoulder. Well, I could walk for days without knowing that. But if I spend every day talking to Him, then my perception of Kodesh Baruch Hu becomes stronger and stronger. And because I'm working on it, He's going to reveal Himself to me more. Right? He's going to start giving more of His revelation. In fact, that's what we talked about in Eilu Devarim. In Eilu Devarim, Putahem, there are rewards, there's spiritual rewards in this world. Hashem will, the more effort you put into your spiritual development, whether it's through physical work, or whether it's through davening, or learning Torah, physical mitzvah, whatever it is, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will then help you in that, in your relationship with Him, and will come in more and more and more into your relationship with Him. That's what we're gedolim get to. So anyway, it's not just running to do, but really evaluating, am I doing the right thing? Am I having a relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu? And becoming as clear as you possibly can in your avodah to Hashem. And the Tisha B'Av gives us the opportunity to kind of evaluate and clarify and renew. And ultimately, after the Tisha B'Av, after the morning, is to renew start renew that relationship with Kaddish Baruch Hu.
Thank you.